training, she could exceed some of your strongest masters. Perhaps Sood has sent us this gift. We would be remiss not to consider such a possibility." The queen's expression was smooth, but she seemed to weigh his words carefully. Finally, she transferred her attention back to Kai.
"Speak, young prince. You always have much to say."
"I have seen her use her fire, and her gift is strong," Kai said. "She could be a valuable addition to the masters."
He hesitated before adding in a low, almost urgent tone,
"And it might reveal things about her gifts that could be of great interest."
A crease formed between Queen Nalani's brows. Some silent message seemed to pass between her and Kai.
"And suppose she uses her training and knowledge against us?"
"We risk nothing, as she is here and can be kept contained," Kai answered.
"I would never use my knowledge against you or your kingdom, your majesty."
"No, I would use it to save Tempesia.
I needed the knowledge of the masters. Once I found out how to destroy the Minax, I would leave." She stared at me for a long time, then finally shook her head.
"I cannot afford to take unnecessary risks."
My heart sank as she continued.
"Do not think you'll be treated poorly, young lady. I understand that it was Prince Kai who brought you here, but I cannot trust you. You'll be kept in my prison until I decide what to do with you."
A drop of sweat trailed down my back. I thought wildly for something that would change her mind. Prince Aiko looked unruffled by her verdict, but Kai showed his agitation with restless movements and quickened breathing.
"Your Majesty, please," Kai began.
The Queen held up a hand.
"Do not waste your breath, young prince. I will decide an appropriate punishment for your disobedience. Your family's loyalty alone is what saves you from imprisonment as well. You will remain in my castle until I decide what to do. Only a sign from the goddess herself would change my mind at this point."
As the queen frowned at him, a strong gust of wind blew through the balcony doors, lifting the gauzy curtains. The torches bent and flickered. The hot, humid air settled like a blanket over my skin. The queen looked over in surprise. Prince Aiko turned to her and smiled.
"I believe you have Sood's answer, my dear."
She paused for a long moment before nodding.
"Indeed, it seems Sood has spoken. I am resolved, then."
She had a more relaxed air, as if the tension of uncertainty had drained from her.
"Ruby."
"Yes?"
"You will be admitted to the school for assessment and training. If the masters declare you a suitable candidate, I will allow you to take the trials. If you pass, you will be initiated as a Fireblood Master and sworn to Sudisha. If you'd go to such lengths to embrace your heritage, that would give you a measure of credibility in my eyes. Perhaps I would even grow to trust you and allow you to live freely here."
The relief was so great. I had to lock my knees to stay upright.
"You risk your life at each stage of the trials. There are sacrifices you may be unprepared for."
Her dark eyes held me spellbound. I had the uncomfortable sensation that she could see into my mind, that she was picking apart my motives and seeing the things I was trying to keep hidden.
"You will have to pledge yourself to me if you are initiated as a master," she added. "Your allegiance, your very life, will be mine."
As we left the throne room, Kai led me down the tower stairs and through a long arcade with sun-filled arches supported by thick, round columns. When we were safely out of view of any courtiers or guards, I turned and gave his chest a shove.
"A spy!"
I could hardly even get the words out. He crossed his arms and leaned against a column.
"I never actually lied."
"You said the queen had sent for me."
"I may have bent the truth to ease your worries. And I knew the queen would welcome you once you were here."
His refusal to admit fault was infuriating. "And that was your idea of a warm welcome?"
"What harm has come to you? If you recall, I said you could train to be a Fireblood Master. The queen agreed to let you take the trials. And quite easily, I might add."
"You forgot to mention she would essentially own me if I passed."
His brows rose a fraction. Everyone knows that the masters are the queen's puppets.
I don't know these things.
Suddenly, I was frustrated with myself for not pressing Kai for more information before and during our journey. He glanced pointedly out the window at figures in the courtyard. A few curious faces were turned in our direction. I raised my voice.
And I don't care who he is!
Then by all means, he said, more urbane than ever. Let us air your secrets here. I only thought you might prefer to speak of this in the privacy of your room. Go ahead, scream it all in front of the court. They do love a good show. I sighed and lowered my voice.
Why bring me here if that's not what she wanted?
To save your life, for one thing. Not that you've shown a scrap of gratitude.
Don't make it sound altruistic. You're trying to trade me for a second chance at something.
His chin lifted.
Some of us have to fight for the things that are offered so readily to others.
Stop wallowing. You're a blasted prince for Sood's sake. A flush crept across his cheeks.
You know nothing of Sudija. Nothing. And until you do, don't presume to judge me, Lady Ruby.
He made it sound like I was being unreasonable.
I wanted to lash out, unleash my fire on him. But he could do the same and more. This was his domain, not mine. And no matter how furious he'd made me, I was the fool who'd believed him.
He turned, continuing down the corridor at a quickened pace.
Wait, Kai, I said, wrestling with my temper.
What? He didn't stop walking.
Where is the throne?
That brought him to a halt. He turned and regarded me with quizzical annoyance.
We just came from the throne room.
I mean the throne of Sood. Black lava rock running with molten lava, massive and intimidating, sound familiar?
That throne was destroyed in a volcanic eruption, along with the old castle and everything in it.
No, this couldn't be happening. I had counted on finding the fireman axe in the throne of Sood.
When?
I asked. He shook his head.
I don't know, before I was old enough to remember. Most of the island was evacuated for a time. Everything was rebuilt here. This is the only castle I remember.
I put a hand to my stomach. My shoulders hunched as if I'd just received a body blow. What a fool I'd been. Rushing to Sudija with little more than a handful of stories and loads of assumptions.
Ruby, you all right?
Kai put a hand to my shoulder. I straightened up and his hand fell away.
I'm fine. Show me to my room.
It was time to start making new plans.
Chapter 10.
I spent the night in a guest room decorated in blue and gold, with beaded throw pillows, painted vases filled with hibiscus, and lamps made of coloured glass. The bed frame was heavy and intricate, with four polished wooden posts at the head and four posts at the foot, all rising to meet elaborate woodwork that ended in a sort of square border, draped in cream silk at the top. I lay on the bed but didn't sleep. My thoughts raced. Despite the shocks and disappointments of the past day, not much had changed. The absence of the throne didn't alter my primary mission. I needed to find the book. It would reveal how to destroy the Minax, and I had to believe there was more than one way to do so. Finding the book meant gaining access to the Fireblood School, which meant taking the trials. I might actually become a Fireblood Master. Whether I was strong enough and powerful enough remained to be seen, but I couldn't fool myself any longer. On some level, I wanted this. I wanted to test my abilities and master them, to prove myself, to be more than I was. The excitement lasted for a few seconds until I remembered what passing meant, pledging my life to the Queen, giving up my freedom, following her orders. I might never see Arcas again. The Fireblood School was a squat, pillared building made of sun-burnished yellow stone. Vivid pink and red flowers in clay pots softened the linear facade with delicate leaves and round blooms.
A gracefully arched doorway led into a courtyard where pairs of students move in and out of view, their grunts and exclamations mixing with the dissonant music of wooden wind chimes trembling in a light breeze. A tall man stepped through the doorway and bowed. He had a crooked nose that looked as if it had been broken and healed more than once, rounded cheekbones, and deep grooves carved between his brows. A streak of reddish-orange ran through his dark hair, while a sprinkling of grey touched his temples. His hair had been scraped back and secured at the nape of his thick neck. His eyes moved over me with a kind of focused assessment I'd seen on the faces of hostlers evaluating horseflesh. It was impossible to tell from his closed expression whether I passed muster. At least I'd braided my hair neatly, and a maid had washed my tunic and leggings before laying them out on my bed that morning.
"This is Master Dalla," said Kai,
the first words he'd spoken since coming to fetch me for a tense and silent carriage ride.
"He is the senior master and in charge of the school."
Master Dalla merely nodded and turned, leading us in. He and Kai exchanged pleasantries while I glanced around. Students from about 10 years old to young adulthood were sparring in the large, open courtyard, using only their hands and feet as weapons, kicking, punching, blocking, and flipping their opponents. They didn't use fire. After a few minutes, one of the masters, you could tell by her bright orange tunic, while the students wore sunny yellow, gave a loud whistle. Everyone moved back, forming a circle that left the center of the courtyard empty. Another master called out names and two students stepped forward. They bowed, took their positions, knees bent, fists at the ready, and at a command, began to move. The opponents clearly weren't novices, but they weren't perfect. Some movements were quick and well executed, while others were ill-timed or poorly aimed. The master in charge barked corrections, and the students made appropriate adjustments. Then the master said a word I didn't recognize, and bolts of flame issued from the students' hands, meeting in the center and flowing toward the sky. "What did he say?" I asked Kai, who sat to my right, cross-legged on the packed earth. In my curiosity, I'd forgotten I wasn't speaking to him.
"The commands are given in ancient Sudesian," he whispered, only a slight curve of his lips betraying that he'd noticed I'd broken my silence. "The first word meant release, the next word meant spiral, and this move now is called flick.
It looks similar to Tale of the Dragon." Kai looked intently at me.
"That's the combination of spiral and flick.
You know it." I nodded, absent-mindedly making the motions in the air. Brother Thistle had taken great pains to teach it to me those many months ago, when I'd struggled to gain even a basic command of my gift. I noticed someone watching me, and turned my head to find Master Dallas staring.
"Perhaps our guest is keen to show us our skills in a practice match," he said.
Before I could answer, he stood and whistled. The students immediately ceased sparring and bowed before running to sit at the edge of the circle.
"Prince Kai, if you would, please," the master said.
Kai glanced down at his red silk doublet and pristine black leggings. I snorted. "Worried I'll ruin your pretty clothes." He sprang to his feet, his mouth assuming its typical smirk.
"Not at all. I merely hope my skill doesn't blind you."
"Your doublet is doing that already." His eyes crinkled, the gold flecks standing out against the brown, his irises carved from tiger eye agate.
"If only your attacks are as sharp as your tongue, Lady Ruby. Why don't you show us all what you can do?"
He walked backward into the circle, arms spread wide in challenge, and raised his voice.
"Behold! The girl who melted the frost throne will honour us with a glimpse of her greatness!"
And he topped the speech with a sweeping bow. I looked around anxiously. I'd learned to fight from Brother Thistle and Arcus, matching their frost with my fire. I had no idea how to combat someone who shared my gift, but something about Kai's cocky grin made me determined to surprise him.
"All right, but what if we hurt someone?"
I gestured to the spectators.
"We're all firebloods here," Master Dalla replied. and we will protect our students."
There were several masters spaced out at intervals in the circle, gazes alert, hands ready. I took a breath and returned Kai's bow before raising my fists.
"Begin," said Master Dalla.
The words still hung in the air as Kai punched out an experimental tongue of flame. I ducked and returned the favor, but missed him by inches. He had already swept a gout of fire at my feet. I jumped over the sheet of flame and sent my own at his chest. He ducked and somersaulted backward, his fists thrusting out twin jets as he regained his stance. One caught my sleeve, setting it alight. I dropped to the ground to put it out, then dodged another attack. Kai's movements were fast, agile, and unpredictable. I found my mind shutting off and instinct taking over. Attack, jump, twist, duck, counterattack. I threw out a wide swathe of stinging flame. Too late, I realized my attack was curving toward the students. The masters positioned their palms facing me. Their fingers pointed at one another and redirected my fire in an arc around the circle, all hands receiving and shaping the flow of it. I hesitated, marveling at the way they had worked together. The fire controlled so neatly, when a burst of heat crashed into my shoulder, nearly knocking me down. I twisted and whipped out a spiral of flame, twitching it at the end like a whip.
"So, you do know tale of the dragon," Kai said with a grin, even as a red welt bloomed on his cheek. "But do you know Sud's hammer?"
A roughly hammer-shaped swirl of flame formed in his hand and came bearing down on me. I leaped out of the way as it slammed the ground, sending up a cloud of white dust.
"Or Fireblade?"
He swished twin razors of flame at me from both sides. With nowhere else to go, I threw myself on the ground, hands over my head. Kai's laughter drifted over me.
"Or Sud's bowl?" he taunted.
Heat surrounded me. I uncovered my head to see myself trapped under an inverted bowl of flame that burned so hot its center held tongues of blue. It wasn't the blue of frost fire, not nearly so bright. But any hint of blue meant it was hot enough to injure me. Grandmother had once told me that blue flames meant burns even for a fireblood. Kai's fire was strong, maybe stronger than mine. I needed a way out. I gathered my heat and threw both arms up, punching a column of fire through the bowl. As I leaped out, Kai twitched to the right. I had noticed that he had a tendency to dodge that direction, and blinked in apparent surprise, giving me a moment before his hand came up to attack. I sent fire arrows at his face. He turned nimbly and met my arrows with heat that sent them off course, then clouted me in the chest with a thick bolt of fire. As I flew backward, I fisted twin vortexes at him, not at where he stood, but curving toward where I anticipated he would move, to his right. I heard the attack connect and Kai fall, just as my back met the packed earth, the air leaving my lungs.
"Enough!" Master Dalla shouted.
His shadow fell across my face as I gasped for breath.
"You are untrained," he said quietly. "But you did not disgrace yourself. Your gift is strong."
It took me a second to realize that the master's hand was held out. I let him pull me up, just as Kai stumbled upright a few feet away, wiping his brow with his sleeve.
"I call this match a draw," Master Dalla said to the crowd.
Young faces beamed at us, some of the students whispering and elbowing each other. It looked as if they'd enjoyed the show.
"Prince Kai," said the master, "if you and your guests would both follow me."
Kai was brushing dust off his now ragged-looking doublet, his brows drawn tight. "Are you more upset that you lost?" I asked, gleeful that his cocky grin was finally missing. "Or that I ruined your clothes?"
"It was a draw," he corrected, as we followed Master Dalla through a shaded walkway and into the school. "And yes, I am upset that you ruined my doublet."
He leaned toward me, his breath warm on my ear.
"What are you going to do to compensate me for my loss? You don't have any Sudesian coin yet, so..."
His smile and the twinkle in his golden brown eyes suggested several alternatives.
Why did you wear it here if it's so precious? I turned my gaze ahead, fighting the heat that rose to my cheeks. It was annoying how easily he could make me blush.
I didn't expect to fight you. And when I did agree, I didn't expect you to be so good.
There was unmasked appreciation in his tone. I smiled at that. You underestimated me.
It won't happen again, little bird, I assure you.
We passed a black lacquered door with two burly masters positioned on either side. What's in there? I whispered to Kai.
The master's library, he whispered back, where all the secrets of the universe are found, or so they say.
More likely it's full of rotted parchment. Master Dalla wears his key around his neck, the show-off.
My heart did a little reel in my chest. I was so close. Pernilius's creation of the thrones might sit only a few yards away, holding the answers to the Minax's destruction. Part of me wanted to rush the guards and break through the doors, but I'd likely just end up in prison. No, I needed to become a master so I had access to it for as long as I needed to find the right information. At the end of the corridor, we entered a spacious room with arched openings to the corridor. The structure reminded me a bit of Four Wind Abbey. Whereas the abbey was bleak and grey, the school's warm yellow stones seemed to soak up and reflect the slanting sunlight. Master Dalla gestured for us to sit on jewel-bright cushions on the tiled floor as he took his seat in an upholstered chair with gilded armrests. It was clear from his saturnine demeanour that the school was his kingdom and this was his throne. He studied me for a few moments before speaking.
The Queen sent a message that you wished to take the trials.
Yes. My pulse, just calming from the fight, picked up speed again.
And you want this of your own free will?
I met his eyes squarely. Yes.
Why?
He shot back, the question almost a command. I paused. I want to learn the skills you can teach me and gain control over my gift.
And what will you do with that control and that skill?
That was a harder question. I glanced at Kai, but he just looked forward resolutely, calmly, as if it was obvious, as if he'd been born knowing the correct answer to that question. I will use those skills to serve the Queen, I said, aware of how vague that sounded.
Forgive my candor, but you weren't born here. Why do you wish to serve the Queen? What would make you want to dedicate your life to serving her?
Reasons flitted through my mind. What would convince the skeptical master? After a few seconds, he shook his head.
If you are to take the trials, you must know the answer deep in your bones. If you must think before answering, you're not ready.
The walls and floor radiated stored heat from the sun, and my nerves further heated my skin. I hooked a finger around the damp strands of hair that had come loose from my braid and pushed them behind my ear. As I did so, Master Dalla's eyes fixed on the left side of my face.
Where did you get that mark?
He asked abruptly. Instinctively, my fingertips moved to cover the heart-shaped mark. Dizziness hit. Everything slowed, sight and sound fuzzing, a tingle sliding up the back of my neck. As I blinked, the world shifted. My hands gripped the railing of a ship as I stared into the churning froth that slid against the hull. My stomach roiled. I was so ill, so tired. Tired of fighting the impulses, the urge to hurt people around me, which stole my sleep and made me shut myself away for hours at a time until the feelings were under control. How much longer could I survive this? How much longer could I pretend? I swallowed and gripped harder, closing my eyes. I had to make it to land, at least. But even then, I had to hold on until I could... A warm hand on my wrist made the image blur. A soft voice said my name. I blinked and shook myself. Master Dalla regarded me intently, his brows slightly furrowed. He had asked me a question. About my scar. I opened my mouth, but no words came out. His frown deepened.
Kai watched me too. I knew they were waiting for a reply. The Minax marked me and told me I was its true vessel. It promised to return when I was filled with despair. I am the child of light or the child of darkness, or neither, and no one knows and I don't want to know. I never want to know. I couldn't say any of that. I could barely admit it to myself. I was suddenly furious, with the Minax who kept sending me these bizarre visions, and with myself for being unable to control them, to shut them out. This was my chance to enter the trials, but I was ruining everything, making the Master doubt me. I needed an answer, and it had to be the right one. The scar was from...
A birthmark, said Kai smoothly,
snapping time back into place.
She doesn't like to talk about it. Something about superstitions and Tempesia.
He waved a hand as if dismissing the Northern Kingdom and all its silly beliefs. I expelled a breath, grateful for the easy lie. Yes, I was born with it. And you asked me why I would dedicate my life to the Queen. I was never accepted in Tempesia. That much was true. My true home is here, and my place is serving her. I want nothing else. I made sure to meet the Master's eyes, unwavering. His expression darkened, and he went silent.
Very well, he said finally. You may take the trials. You have a week to prepare.
Kai made a strangled noise. Master Dalla turned grim eyes on him.
Master, said Kai respectfully. A week? Most students have years. Indeed. And that is the challenge you have been set by the Queen, Prince Kai, the Master said. You will train Ruby, and you may use the school as often as you wish. If she passes, you will be allowed to take your final trial a second time. I don't have to tell you that getting a second chance is unprecedented. The Queen has been very generous.
I sucked in a breath, looking quickly at Kai to gauge his reaction. So this was the reason he'd made the long voyage to Tempesia and risked the Frost Court. To trade me for a second chance at the trials. And he was getting what he wanted. I expected to see satisfaction, maybe elation, on his expressive features. But if he was happy, it was hard to tell. He didn't move or speak for several seconds. It was unlike him to be at a loss for words. I touched his shoulder and his lashes fluttered, as if he were coming out of a trance.
I trust this is to your satisfaction?
Master Dalla asked dryly, his mouth curving ever so slightly as he watched Kai's reaction. I wondered if it was the closest thing to humour that the Master ever allowed himself. A telltale pulse beat in Kai's neck. He stood and bowed low.
Extremely generous. Thank you.
We left the school, skirting groups of sparring students in the courtyard. Kai's hands were balled into fists. I tilted my head up to speak in his ear. You're pale as death. You look like you've eaten a bad fish. Even my insult didn't jar him from his unaccustomed silence. He seemed to relax a little, though. By the time we reached the carriage, he'd regained his colour, along with his usual arrogant strut. When I was seated across from him, he knocked on the roof and we rolled away from the school. He stared at nothing in particular. What's wrong with you? I leaned forward. If I'm not mistaken, you were just given your second chance. I would have thought you'd be, well, I don't know, happy?
I am happy,
he bit out. My eyebrows rose. You seem like it.
Conditions, he frowned. I should have known she would add conditions.
Why is it so important to you, passing the trials? He shot me a burning glare, as if I knew the answer and was merely baiting him. What? I gave him an open palm gesture. I wasn't born here, I don't know these things.
Only a master can rule an island. Without passing the trials, I won't be able to succeed my father as ruler of our home.
Oh. The pieces fell into place. When did you take the trials the first time?
He didn't bother looking at me as he answered. Almost 2 years ago.
What happened?
He grimaced. Revealing details of the trials is forbidden.
So how are you supposed to train me if you can't tell me what to expect?
He waved a vague hand.
I'll figure it out.
He was beyond frustrating.
Well, at least I know why you lied to me, essentially kidnapped me, and handed me to your queen like a wrapped present.
You agreed willingly enough.
Yes, we need to talk about all the lies you told to secure that agreement. For the record, I haven't forgiven you. I just put it aside because we had more important things to worry about today.
Fine. I admit that I lied. But in the end, you're getting what you want, aren't you?
The chance to learn how to master your gift?
You were eager enough when you asked the Queen to give you a chance at the trials.
I don't like being lied to. Besides, she may be letting me take the trials, but I'm still under her control. I would rather have come here secretly.
He snorted. Nothing happens on Seer without the Queen knowing. You'd have been worse off if you'd tried to sneak in.
I folded my arms.
He stared at me for a few seconds. All right, I'm sorry. I was desperate. I didn't know you.
You know me now. I stared at him. Don't lie to me again.
I promise, he said, fighting a smile.
I don't trust you when you smirk at me like that.
My enjoyment has nothing to do with whether or not I'm telling the truth. It's just that you're rather adorable when you're annoyed.
Am I forgiven? The answer was easy. No.
You'll have to forgive me once you pass your trials, he said with confidence. We'll train every available moment until you're as prepared as I can make you. Be warned, though. It won't be easy.
I'm not scared of hard work.
Good.
He settled back and folded his arms behind his head. When he started to put his feet up on my seat, I knocked them off with my knee. It wouldn't do to let Kai have his way all the time. It would become truly impossible. As we passed the wharf, my nose wrinkled at the scent of hundreds of sweaty fishermen and labourers and 10 times as many dead fish being gutted or dried or piled into baskets. In between shacks and fishmongers' huts, the sea sparkled with flecks of sunlight that winked like a 1,000 cold diamonds. It reminded me a little of Arcus's eyes when he was angry. Sun-bleached, blue-lit with white sparks. The bobbing ships made me think of the vision I'd just had in the Fireblood School. Whereas previous visions had been some form of memory, aside from the vision in the throne room, which was so strange it had seemed more like a nightmare, this recent one had felt real. Like a glimpse through a spyglass, as if I'd been watching something that was really happening. I had the sense I'd fallen into the Minax's mind for a few minutes. If that were true, it had found its way to possessing some hapless sailor and was currently on a ship.
What if it was on its way to Sudesia?
Would it come all this way to find me, its true vessel? If so, it only made my mission more vital. I couldn't help but wonder what might happen to Kai once I escaped Sudesia. Would the Queen turn on him and punish him for my disloyalty? Imprison him? Judging by our interaction in the throne room, she seemed as mercurial as the sea, capable of anything. I watched Kai as he lazed on the carriage seat, staring out the window with a placid expression, as if he hadn't a care in the world. The only detail that belied the studied picture of ease was the hand resting on his knee. It was curled into a white-knuckled fist.
Chapter 11.
Forget what your frostblood monk taught you. I'm telling you to rein in your fire on the upswing and let it out at the end.
Kai demonstrated by snapping a fire whip, the crack reverberating off the walls of the school. We'd arrived at the end of a morning practice session, watching a few minutes of sparring before the students filed inside for meditation. The scent of flowers perfumed the oppressively humid air. A handful of masters watched us from discreet positions on benches or stools. We'd been practicing for an hour, and Kai was already impatient. It didn't bode well for the rest of the afternoon. Fine. I swished the fiery rope into the air in what I thought were impressive trails of flame. I controlled it well, but even I could see that it didn't crack with the kind of force Kai had achieved. He closed his eyes, his lips moving silently. Maybe he was begging Sood for patience, or more likely asking her to sweep me away with a strong wind that deposited me in a conveniently deep area of the sea. His initial optimism seemed to have worn off. He had to be so aggrieved that his second chance depended on me passing my trials. Served him right for bringing me here in the first place.
But yours has no bite.
He cracked another fire whip over my head, making me cringe involuntarily.
Your way is a dull sword, a toothless snake. You need to fully realize each and every move. You won't pass the trials if you continue to...
I'm trying, Kai. I learned it one way and I just can't undo that in my mind. He expelled a frustrated breath.
I don't have time to unteach you as well as teach you.
I shared his frustration. If I couldn't do this, all was lost. If my gift wasn't strong enough, or if I wasn't fast enough or clever enough to learn these lessons, everything I'd done since leaving Tempesia would be for nothing.
My failure would mean the deaths of countless others if the Minax remained free.
Kai stared at his feet, his brow creased. This wasn't any easier for him, I realized. So much rested on our combined success. We were so similar, both ready to lose our tempers at the slightest provocation. But I also saw his vulnerability. As uncertain as he was of me, he must feel a little uncertain of himself, too. I want to learn, Kai. I waited until he lifted his head and looked at me before continuing. But I'm having trouble understanding. Brother Thistle learned from watching the masters at a Fireblood school. It could have been this very school. How could his teaching be so different? He stared at me for a moment, his brow furrowed, then strode forward and grabbed my hands, turning them to face upward. I followed his gaze to my palms, which were dry and chafed and still smoking slightly from my last move.
The general principles he taught you are fine, but your monk is a Frostblood. He had to adapt these moves so they worked with ice, an element based in water.
He pressed my palms together and pulled them apart.
Ice breaks, loses its form. It's not as malleable, not as adaptable.
He curled my fingers against his palms, making fists.
As a result, Frostbloods rely more on brute force. But Firebloods...
He opened my hand again, staring down at it for a second before lifting his head to meet my eyes.
Make a small flame, Ruby. Small.
I nodded and brought a flame to life in my palm. Kai held his fingers over it and, with a graceful manipulation as if he were sculpting clay, he made the fire twist and rise in little sections, its form almost like a castle. Or a crown.
You're working with fire. He explained, something that feeds on air and thrives on sharp bursts.
He made the castle crown flare toward the sky, then smoothed his fingers against my palms, pressing until the fire died. Then he stroked my fingers until they stretched straight out. A tremor raced through my limbs.
Fire is hungry, but it's also elegant.
He turned my hands over again, lifting the right one and brushing his lips to the back, as if he were a gentleman meeting me for the first time. A shiver rippled across my shoulders.
Wild and precise. Dangerous, but beautiful.
He stared at me, his eyes bright and intense. The heat from his body so close pressed against me. It was like standing next to a bonfire. Even though I half suspected this was another excuse to flirt, for a second I wanted to move closer. I was drawn by his heat, the sense of familiarity I'd felt from the moment he'd first touched me in the ice garden. Our similarity, how easy it was to understand him. The impulses were distracting, but at the back of my mind I saw another face, Arcus's cold blue eyes warming with approval as he trained me in Four Wind Abbey. The tilt of his admiring smile when I surprised him with a move while we were sparring in the castle garden. The echo of him reverberated through the moment, breaking the spell. I shook my hands free and stepped back. I'm not sure I agree. Brother Thistle is plenty elegant in his use of frost.
Perhaps.
He sounded skeptical.
But you had nothing to compare him to. You've never seen Fireblood Masters perform.
He turned to two of the masters, a man and woman, and bowed respectfully before speaking to them in quick Sudesian that I couldn't catch. They nodded and came forward. Kai pulled me to sit beside him on the packed dirt.
Watch.
The masters bowed to each other. Their loose breeches tapered tightly at the ankle. Their feet were bare. I expected them to fight, but as soon as they started to move, I could see this wasn't a contest so much as a performance. As quick as hummingbirds, they punched, dodged, kicked, rolled, landed on their backs and pushed up, springing to their feet with impossible agility. Sometimes they used each other as props, linking arms or running up the back of their opponent before flinging themselves into a backflip, landing with effortless precision, then twirling and kicking, each movement blending into the next. If there had been music to accompany it, it would have been frenetic and lovely. It was a ruthless symphony of movement and sounds, the slap of bare feet on bare earth, the swish of a punch, the thud of a kick that just barely connected. They were so controlled, and yet they seemed to pour out everything, holding nothing back. A shiver crept across my skin. It was the most spectacular display I'd ever seen. It was a fight, but it was also a dance. Kai leaned close to whisper.
It's a thing of incredible grace, is it not? I've seen them many times and I never fail to be overawed by the wonder of it. I don't believe you've ever seen Frostbloods move like this.
This is what I'm supposed to learn. I shook my head. If I had to achieve this level of skill to pass the trials, I was doomed. I would never learn this, not in a lifetime, and certainly not in a week.
The dance of aggression went on. I could see that the masters really weren't hurting each other.
The punches stopped a hair's breadth from an opponent's nose, the kicks mostly for show. If one combatant had made a tiny error, he or she could have done serious damage. But there were no errors, no hesitations, no slips. Just a smooth, effortless homage to movement and possibility. And then, the fire. They let loose streams of bright heat, feathery plumes that half blinded me. The plumes curved like wings, enveloping the masters with rose-like petals of flame. Then all four hands sent fiery beams straight up to the sky, seeming to touch the sun. The movements came faster, the twists sharper, the feats more daring, until the blur of motion only registered on some unconscious level. This must be the result of incredible raw talent mixed with years of grueling training. When they finally stopped, sweating and bowed once more, I leaped to my feet to applaud. Kai's hand touched my forearm, and I saw that he was standing too. He bowed, and I followed suit. The masters returned the gesture, smiling brightly before returning to their seats. Exhilaration sang in my blood, but I reminded myself I wasn't here to relax and watch a show. I was here to learn. So that was a lesson in... I trailed off.
In beauty.
Kai raised his face to the sun, showing me the classical lines of his profile.
In pride, artistry. You may not think it matters, and maybe it doesn't to your Tempesian sensibilities, but it does to us.
He turned his gaze back to me, shining an even brighter gold, as if the sun had poured in and become trapped in his eyes.
The mastery of fire is not only about force. Beauty is inherent in every movement, if done correctly. The two are intertwined. At its best, fighting with fire is as lovely as a dance.
Can you do that?
I motioned to where the masters had performed, a few scorch marks in the dirt the only evidence of their display.
Of course, he answered haughtily, and chuckled at my expression. I'm not that proficient yet. We all have strengths and weaknesses.
He beckoned me to stand and join him in the circle again. He spread his feet and raised his fists, ready to spar.
What's your weakness? I asked, curiously.
His expression cooled.
You're my apprentice, not my confessor. Try the move again.
Strength? Agility? Speed? His jaw lifted. It seemed I'd nicked his pride.
None of those. Now, focus.
As he demonstrated the correct techniques, I watched with the hunger of a predatory bird, trying to imprint every nuance of his movements into my mind. It wasn't that I'd been doing things wrong exactly, just inefficiently, at least compared to him. Every shift of his feet, every extension of his arm, every breath and grunt and punch was designed to give maximum impact to the moves he executed. And execution was the perfect description. There was a ruthlessness to the way he moved, a threat in every aspect of his posture. From the cords standing out in his neck, to the way his fingers curled as he let flames loose. If he'd been a genuine opponent intent on hurting me, I might have lost my nerve. His attacks landed on me like hard slaps. Kai ordered breaks to let me catch my breath, but as the hours wore on, my limbs grew heavy. I realized that he'd held back before, giving me opportunities to strike. Now he was relentless. Had to struggle every second to keep up.
Defend, said Kai for the 100th time.
I brought my forearm up a little too late. My foot slipped, and I was on my back. Kai's silhouette loomed over me. My vision blurred. My scar burned.
Get up, said Kai again.
But his breath fell cold against my face, and his voice was lower, gravelled. The voice of another opponent in another fight.
Wait, I gasped, fighting the sensation. No, not now, not again. Colours swirled and faded from the scene. Kai's heart pulsed white in his chest. The Frost King's arena loomed at the edges of my vision. I closed my eyes and scrambled backward, finding my feet and turning to stumble toward the gate that led out of the school, desperate to leave before the vision could take over. A hand grasped my shoulder and spun me around.
Where do you think you're going? If you're even thinking of giving up, I don't want to hurt you, I said, twisting away. He scoffed. You were flat on your back. Just give me a minute.
I breathed heavily, hands on my knees, waiting for the feelings to pass. The vision had never quite taken hold, but I experienced the same after effects. My skin was chilled. I trembled despite the heat. When Kai's palm slid gently to my upper back, I found myself turning to him, reveling in his warmth. I heard his surprised inhalation, and then his arms came around me, holding me with reassuring pressure. After a moment, he rested his cheek on my hair.
I have you, he said softly. And just like that, a shuddering breath expanded my chest and my eyes filled. Humiliation washed through me at the thought of showing my emotions so easily. I tried to push him away, but he held tighter.
Hush.
I'm not a child, I said between uneven breaths, embarrassed that he felt the need to comfort me.
I don't even know why I'm... I gulped and blinked rapidly. Had it been the loss of control or the thought of hurting Kai that had bothered me so much? Or maybe the stress had been building more than I'd realized. Either way, I felt like a weak fool for allowing my tears to overspill so easily.
Everyone needs comfort, he soothed,
the words rumbling in my ear pressed against his chest.
You fight your emotions too much, Ruby.
A fireblood feels too much to suppress.
You do yourself harm by denying them.
Let them flow. Like you. They sniffed and worked my hand into the space between my cheek and his chest to wipe my eyes. Blustering and angry one second, then laughing and flirting the next.
He chuckled. I follow my nature. We all must do the same. Stop trying to shut down your feelings. Cry, Ruby. And when you're finished crying, do what you feel like. Nobody here will think less of you for it.
I raised my head a little to look at the masters, wondering if they were staring, expecting to see censure on their faces. Instead, they were unconcerned, one reading a book while two others spoke softly. One of them caught my eye and smiled. I turned my head back into Kai's chest, embarrassed. That's not acceptable where I come from. He scoffed.
I've seen Frostblood culture. A bunch of walking snowmen, priding themselves on self-control. They're barely alive. What's the point of living if you can't let yourself feel anything?
I thought of Arcus. Surely that didn't apply to him. He felt deeply, he just kept it hidden. That was one thing we'd always had in common, though I had a much harder time hiding my feelings than he did. Maybe I didn't have to anymore. My whole life had been spent trying to tamp down my feelings, keep them under wraps so I could hide my gift. It had been sheer necessity, a matter of life or death. When I'd been discovered and my mother had been killed, I'd blamed myself for practicing my gift when she'd forbidden it. I'd drawn the soldiers' attention. Even now, when I let myself remember, I'd feel such terrible guilt it would overwhelm me. It scares me, I whispered. I don't like to lose control. His voice was low and firm.
If you would let yourself feel more freely, you'd find yourself struggling less. The volcano that pours lava continuously is less likely to erupt.
Is that true? He grinned.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
I couldn't help but chuckle. That's all that matters to you, isn't it? Sounding good. Looking good, feeling good. Don't worry about anything serious. He tilted his head to the side, considering, then shrugged.
Worry causes wrinkles.
Sued forbid. Smothering a smile, I faked a bored look of superiority, the kind Morella had perfected. Neither your clothing nor your skin shall bear such shameful signs of wear. He threw back his head and laughed, then gave me a little squeeze.
You're quite amusing when you're not lashing me with that sharp tongue, although...
His eyes turned sultry.
I might not mind the violence of your tongue in the right circumstances.
I shook my head reprovingly, my lips twitching.
You're incorrigible.
He adopted a confused expression.
Is that a compliment or insult? I confess I don't understand your Tempesian values. I finally let myself smile, noticing how his pupils flared in response.
Definitely an insult. It seemed to take effort for him to pull his gaze away.
Very good. I see you've recovered.
Come. He tugged on my hand.
You can knock me into the dirt. That should restore you completely.
We sparred for another 2 hours. But when the sun turned pink with exertion from a long day of warming the earth, the students returned to the training yard, effectively ending our lessons. Kai grinned as we trudged, dusty and exhausted, toward the waiting carriage.
What are you looking so happy about?
I darted a suspicious glance at him.
As I expected. I'm an excellent teacher.
He turned his head to bestow his smile on me like a stray band of sunshine. I blinked.
I suppose there's a compliment to me in there somewhere.
He punched my shoulder lightly.
You stopped fighting yourself and used your emotions to your advantage. Surely you felt the difference.
I had. My attacks had been faster, more confident. I'd let myself enjoy the sensation of turning my anger and determination into flame.
I admit you're not a terrible teacher.
He stopped and grabbed both my hands, bowing over them extravagantly and brushing his warm lips over my knuckles. Before I could chastise him, he was helping me into the carriage. Moments before, I'd been his opponent, struggling to keep my feet as he hit me with attack after attack. In the space of a breath, he was treating me like I was a lady he was courting. I shook my head as Kai settled into the carriage across from me, his long legs stretching indolently like a satisfied cat. Would I ever get used to his changeability? As much as he talked about feelings, it was hard to tell if he felt anything seriously at all. I had to remind myself that he was only training me so that he could have his second chance. I doubt he cared whether I passed or failed, aside from how it affected his own outcome. If I died during the trials, would anyone here care? I stared at the passing scenery, glimpses of the ocean between clusters of homes and vegetation and the wharf. A storm cloud hovered in the sky to the northeast. My thoughts turned to Arcus, the only person that I knew beyond doubt would protect me at his own expense. Well, that had been the problem, hadn't it? He'd been risking his court's wrath to keep me near, and I'd cared enough about him to leave. My chest tightened sharply. Would I ever see him again?
You look sad, said Kai, his eyes glinting. Chin up, little bird. You did well today.
So you think I'll be ready?
He didn't reply right away. I waited, wondering whether he would offer a platitude or an honest reply, wondering which one I wanted.
His expression became uncharacteristically somber.
No one is ever ready for the trials.
Even you.
He hesitated. Unlike the naive boy I was, I now know what to expect.
I thought that was forbidden, knowing what to expect. His generous lips curved, his handsome face losing all traces of seriousness.
I'm the exception to all rules, Ruby. You'd best remember that.
Chapter 12. Days passed in a blur of muscle aches, frustration and bruises, interspersed by glimmers of hope. I couldn't say Kai was patient, but he was determined and unwavering. He showed that he was capable of serious dedication. I knew that every time he attacked or blocked or surprised me, he was doing so because he wanted me to succeed. He wanted me to be ready. If I failed, so would he. He taught me several new moves. He tested the strength of my fire by having me melt or burn myriad objects, and he'd made me meditate for hours to hone my mental control, not allowing me to move until I was frantic with the need to stretch or fidget. I didn't complain. I didn't argue. I learned quickly because I had to. I knew I was improving by the admiration I occasionally saw in his eyes. One unexpected benefit of the long hours of training with Kai, we developed an easy harmony, the kind of meshing of gifts that the masters seemed to prize so highly. I started anticipating his moves before he made them, and he often predicted mine. It meant that neither of us won easily, although I sometimes wondered if Kai was still going easy on me to build my confidence. We became well-matched sparring partners, pushing each other to new extremes of skill and creativity. It made for a few spectacular fights, drawing the students and masters into appreciative crowds on more than one occasion. We hadn't yet come close to the proficiency displayed by the senior masters, though. Many of the children even showed certain skills that already exceeded my own. Still, my gift was strong and growing stronger. Hope grew a little every day. I only wished hope
equaled certainty.
Even if I'd been the brightest pupil in Sudesia,